Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Jeff Blair is pretty good at musical chairs, but this guy might be the best. Ben Ennis does job number 57 of the day, filling in for the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
.10:02 Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis filling in for Jeff Blair. Blue Jays baseball coming your way. 2 o'clock, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. 1:30 on Sportsnet as they wrap up this 10-day, 8-game road swing through Philadelphia, Anaheim, and now Texas in Arlington. Marco Estrada getting the call against Giovanni Gallardo. I have done my due diligence. I looked at the weather report. No rain in the forecast. That rain might be nice. Barry Davis joins us from Globe Life Park in Arlington. And Barry, I imagine you've looked at the weather report, and you probably don't even need to because I bet it's like 30 degrees already in Arlington, 36 around game time. Yeah. That'll be nice.
Yeah, I stepped outside to go grab a cup of coffee, and I realized that I just have to bring a cold cup of water, sit it outside for 30 seconds, and then I can make coffee with that. It's going to be interesting. And I imagine it's going to be even warmer in my little camera bay, but I'm not going to complain. I'm going to track down an umbrella somewhere and just hope for a quick one.
Yeah. My wife is Texan, so I've been down to Texas quite a bit. And the Texans have it figured out in the summer. They just don't go outside. Like, you go to Houston, she's from Houston. You go to Houston, nobody's outside. It's like a ghost town because people stay inside. The golf courses are closed. You can play golf for like $10 because nobody goes outside in the summer, and the Rangers don't normally play afternoon games in the summer. I guess this is just they're forced into it because it's getaway day. Although, I mean, you could still play a night game. It's not like they're playing tomorrow afternoon. You could play. I don't know where the Rangers are. The Rangers headed on the road as well? Do you know? Like, this is a rarity to see an afternoon day game in the summer in Arlington.
Yeah, I think the Rangers are on the road because they played a home series before the Jays came to town. And I can tell you, we're staying, we're in Irving, Texas, and we're on the site of the where the Byron Nelson Classic is played. So I've got a great view of the golf course out my window.
Oh, yeah.
And you would think, with the opportunity to play the course that they play this wonderful tournament on, and it's a gorgeous course, and it's like, you know, just after 9 o'clock in the morning here, and I do not see a single golfer.
Right.
And I can see a lot of the course out my window, and there is not a soul golfing right now. That just gives you a little indication. Now, yes, they do have, the mist fans blowing out of the golf carts and all. And,
yeah.
But, yeah, it's ridiculous. And I do appreciate the reminders of what it's going to be like for me today, Ben. I do appreciate that.
No problem, buddy. I just want to make sure you don't wear like your turtleneck or something. That'd be dumb. Don't do that. Okay.
No suit and tie today, man. I tell you.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. I'll move on from this. I swear, Barry. But we had Shai Davidi on earlier, and he said he's not much of a sweater, but he's figured out the speed at which to walk from the hotel to the ballpark that you don't sweat, and it's like a moonwalk. It's you're barely moving. I know,
yeah,
for me,
he's in a different hotel than I am.
Yeah.
So he has to walk to the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be in a very comfortable air conditioned car.
That's smart.
And hopefully with a stop to, here's the crazy thing. My cameraman, Joel Gallant, I sent him out on a little mission, yesterday. I said, see if you can find a fan.
Yeah.
So, close to the ballpark, there's an enormous Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And they have sold out of fans. They have no fans to sell.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a pretty good indication. I've been to that ballpark. It's the hottest place on planet Earth when it is hot. And I know, like, this is, we're just kind of joking because it doesn't really matter whether you're hot or whether Shai's hot or whether the broadcasters are hot. But the players, like, honestly, that affects the game. Like, you will. I'd be surprised. Like, there's going to be a shorter leash on Marco Estrada, right? Like, we're not going to see him throw 110 pitches today, I wouldn't think.
Oh, yeah. Marco was already talking about this for the last couple of days when he's come out for stretch
And the guy's from Mexico.
Well, yeah. it's going to be hot. You'll see, and people that are watching are going to be wondering what these things are that these on the towels that the players are inhaling. They're ammonia towels that I hope that they throw me a few, and just the fumes of the ammonia and the cold water kind of helps revive you a little bit and helps you from dehydrating. So if they do show a shot of me in the camera bay with a towel over my head, that's exactly what I'm doing. Either that or they're trying to revive me.
Yeah, one or the other. So don't make fun of Barry's hair if it's a little, like, flat today, okay? He's doing his best. He's putting as much product in there as possible. You can't help it. Talking to Barry Davis, he'll be part of the Blue Jays broadcast, of course. Starts at 1:30 on Sportsnet. Blue Jays and Rangers wrapping up this three-game set. You've covered this team for a while, Barry. Is this the most fun you've ever had covering this team?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's still kind of it's a little bit surreal to see, you know, when you hear playoff tickets being on sale. And, yeah, they've been on sale before, but, you know, there was really no need to buy them. To see, you know, the look in the standings at this point in the season and see that, that's, you know, now a two-game bulge in first place and how far out they are, even if they fall to a wild card spot. But what the most amazing thing, Ben, is you would never know it by walking through the Blue Jays clubhouse. I mean, it's a bit of a cliche to say that it's an even keel thing, but they are. It's so businesslike. This team looks exactly the same now than they did when, you know, they were four or five games out of first place. It's just, you know, we come to work, we have fun. It's a very loose group of players. They enjoy each other's presence. But when the game starts, they have a job to do, and they know they have to do it. Right now, though, Ben, I mean, you just look at this team, and I think Ben Revere said it best. He said that he went up to Tulowitzki and said, "Hey, man, if either of us start playing like we're supposed to play, I mean, this team is going to be just off the charts. I mean, how is anyone going to stop them? And there really is no weakness. I mean, even Ryan Goins is hitting well right now. So there's no easy out. And if you're an opposing pitcher, you really are afraid to have to face this team.
And I don't know if it's the nature of being Canadian or being from Toronto, but we're always looking for validation, right? Like, as Canadians, how do our neighbors of the South, what do they think of us? Do they like us? Do they think we're neat? But I am interested to hear, you know, reports and the way opposing broadcasters are talking about this team. And you see people from the States talking about, oh, yeah, the Rangers broadcasters are just fawning over the way this Blue Jays team is playing right now. You're talking to the opposing writers, the opponents' broadcasters. What are they saying about this Blue Jays team?
Everything they should be saying. This team is phenomenal. I think that, you know, they're probably giving it more props than people in Toronto because there's still that fear. Although, I mean, you've seen it on Twitter, Ben. You're seeing less and less of that fear, especially from the fan base.
Yeah.
You know, they're drinking the Kool-Aid, and it took a lot for them to do that. And, you know, we've seen before where, oh, yeah, they're just, we're just going to fall apart soon. You know, when are they going to hit the wall? When are things going to go? I haven't had a chance to listen to Wilner's Blue Jays talk for the last week, but I'm curious to know, you know, how the fan base has turned. And I tell you this, I have not received a tweet saying hashtag fire Gibby in a long time.
I saw one the other day, but it was in jest. But yeah, I bet you it's, I mean, there's still Chicken Littles out there. And to be honest, Barry, I mean, there's playing well and there's playing at a first place level and there's doing what the Blue Jays have done for the last month and a bit now. Because as much as I agree with you that there's hard, it's really difficult to poke holes on this team. Like, isn't that ridiculous to expect them to play this well through September and the first couple of days of October before the regular season is done?
Yeah, absolutely. And game one of this series, Ben, the Blue Jays are trailing. You know, they made a bit of a comeback, and then the Rangers came back. I'm sitting there as they're going to the top of the ninth inning, and I thought to myself, okay, they have to lose sometime. You know, they're not going to run the table, so this just makes sense. This is the game that they'll lose.
Yeah.
You know, and then they'll get back. And the good news for them is the Yankees lost too. So okay, everything stays status quo. So all right, let's chalk this one down. This will be the one they lose, and then they come back and win it. And I'm thinking, okay, now they're winning the games that, you know, it was okay to lose. You know,
yeah.
It's fine, because you're going to lose at some point.
Yep.
And you know, now you just look and you say, well, when are they going to lose? And they're going to lose. So there's no doubt about it. I mean, even the 93 Jays, they had a six-game losing streak in September, but the thing was they never lost first place when they had that losing streak. And that's an important thing for the Blue Jays. They, while they're playing this way, they really have to find a way to get a little bit of padding. I mean, even now having that two-game lead is nice because if they do lose today and the Yankees win, well, they haven't lost that lead in first place. You know, it's always nice to have that little buffer between them and the team that's behind them. But one thing I can tell you, Ben, and this has been the case with the players for, at least for the last, you know, 3-4 weeks, the wild card is an irrelevant thing to them. They don't care about the wild card. They want to win the American League East, and that's what they were feeling long before they took over first in the East.
Yeah, and why not? The gap is so large now on the teams on the outside of the wild card picture looking in. And surprisingly, the Twins are back in there. I never thought the Twins would be back, but here we are, and the Twins are in that second wild card again. Talking to Barry Davis, at some point, I guess, maybe the attention turns to first place in the American League. It's not totally out of the question, Barry. They're only six games back of the Royals right now, and I don't know if we'll get anything on the record about that being the goal, but shouldn't that be the goal?
Yeah, why not? I mean, we saw the way the Blue Jays played the Royals, you know, soon after the trades were made, and the Jays played them very well. And there's a very good chance that's going to be the team the Jays are going to have to get by if they want to, dare I say, reach the World Series this year. So, yeah, why not? I mean, the way this team is playing right now, they've been the hottest team in baseball, and we saw what happened to the Royals last night. And I mean, that can happen, and that can happen to any team.
Yeah.
But what's impressive, Ben, is, you know, you look at what happened to the Yankees two nights ago when they lost, was it 15-2?
Yep.
That doesn't happen to the Blue Jays.
No.
I mean, the games that they've lost, and this is even early on in the season,
it's true,
they were never getting clobbered. I mean, they were losing close ball games. They were losing 5-4 or 3-2 or 2-1. They always had a chance to win these games, and, you know, the trades have worked incredibly well for the Jays. However, that's not the turning point for this team. This team started to really turn it on right after the All-Star break, before those trades were made. You know, this team always had those indications that they were better than what their records show, and whether you want to look at run differential or records in one-run games, this team was always looked at as being better than what their record was. And now the trades have just kind of put them over the top, and the additions and just the changes in the bullpen, like you said, it's really, really hard to look at this team and say, well, yeah, if they only had this or they only had that, because they have all that right now.
Yep, they certainly do. Talking to Barry Davis, before we let you go, Barry, there was so much talk about changing the culture before this season, and we saw some guys sent out of town and some guys brought in that were supposed to change that culture, and maybe the culture had been in the process of changing, or maybe was fully changed before the additions of Troy Tulowitzki and David Price. But you're in there every day. You see these guys. You have an understanding of what they're like on off days as well, and how they get along. Is it just like, an easy thing to just point to and say, oh, they like each other, there's such great chemistry because they're winning seemingly every day? Is there something different about this clubhouse? Like, how should we take it from the outside looking in?
Ben, this began day one of spring training when Russell Martin brought a soccer ball out onto the field in Dunedin, and a bunch of guys came out and played with him. And, you know, R.A. Dickey stole Daniel Norris's van and drove it out into the middle of the outfield. And he just saw things that I'd never seen in all the years that I've been covering this team, a real tight bond. And the great thing is, and kudos to Alex Anthopoulos, because he went out and made sure that, as well as being good baseball players, he wanted to make sure he got good people. And the additions of Tulowitzki and Price and Hawkins, Revere, they've all fit in perfectly. And I think it was Price that just described them as all just pieces of that puzzle. Just, you know, and they just fit in perfectly. And, you know, David Price has very quickly become a leader in the clubhouse. He's the cool guy that everybody wants to be like.
Yeah.
You know, they all got their scooters because David Price had a scooter. And you know, kudos on Price, because the guys that were making the millions, they paid for their own scooters. He got an amazing deal. But anyone who hadn't reached arbitration yet in their careers, and I was talking to Liam Hendricks about it, because he said he handed David Price the money, he cut him a check, goes, here's the money. And David Price goes, no, keep the money.
So he paid for all the guys that, you know, weren't rich guys yet.
Yeah, that's cool.
Paid for their scooters. But even seeing them, and it reminded me of that episode of Seinfeld where George Costanza was all over that boyfriend of Elaine's, and he was like, you know, wanted
Mimbo.
David Price comes in with the Xbox and the NHL 2015, and every day now they're all gathered around the TV watching Price and whomever he's playing against. Everybody wants to take on David Price. And, you know, he's the font in that clubhouse right now, I tell you.
By the way, I did love that interview with Liam Hendricks' dad. I didn't understand a word of it, but I loved it.
You know, he asked me afterwards, he said, yeah, maybe I need a translator. No, that's a bad Australian accent.
No, it's good. It's good. Fine.
And I said, don't worry. Only one person I know said he didn't understand you, so all is good.
And that was me. Barry,
that was you.
If you want to make Deadspin today, like, go out and buy a snowsuit before the broadcast. Like, that that would be hilarious. Like, honestly, if you just wore like, a wool cap today. No?
Oh, man. Yeah. How about if I go shirtless?
Okay, that would also do it. In the other direction. I like where your head's at, though, Barry. Thanks for doing this. We'll be watching this afternoon.
All right, Ben. Take care, buddy.
You too. There's Barry Davis, part of the Blue Jays broadcast crew. Broadcast starting at 1:30 this afternoon. Sportsnet 2 o'clock. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Blue Jays wrapping up this 8-game road swing in Arlington against the Rangers. 10:17, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Annis filling in for Jeff Blair. The FIBA Americas go at the end of the month in Mexico City. The Canadian men's team took the Tuto Marchand Cup. And Tuto Marchand, we already did that. We figured out who he is. He's a guy that's, like, involved in Puerto Rican basketball in some capacity, and he's still alive. So they took that cup yesterday and looking forward to punching their ticket to the 2016 Rio Olympics with a strong finish in Mexico City. Eric Smith will be there. He joins us on the line right now. E, thanks so much for this. You ever been to Mexico City before?
I have not. So I've been to Mexico, but not Mexico City. So, and I'm sure where I've been in Mexico is not Mexico City.
No, it is not a resort town by any stretch of the imagination.
It's a little different.
Yeah, there's many humans there, there's a lot of pollution, and it's elevated. It's a high elevation as well. But I'm sure you'll have a great time. It'll be an experience, no doubt. There's expectations on this Canadian team like never before. What's your take after the victories and going flawless through the Tuto Marchand Cup and knowing that the opponents that they face there will not exactly be the same opponents that they're facing in Mexico City?
Yeah, and I think that's the key there. And by no means do you want to rain on the parade of the Canadians, who certainly played, you know, very well in going 4-0 and winning the tournament, as you mentioned. But you just, you know, hope that there's clearly still enough left in the tank for when it actually matters next week. And I know that's something that Jay Treanor was talking a lot about after the game last night, that, you know, as nice as this was, we've got to make sure that, you know, we play the same way come next week when it truly ultimately does matter. And I think, if anything, Ben, this is a good training ground. This is a good experience more than anything else. Last time this tournament was played, they went 0-4 in kind of those tune-up exhibition-type games in this tournament. So to me, you can only take this as a positive, and it's an opportunity for this crew that really hasn't played a whole lot together to get in those reps together and to gain some familiarity before it truly does matter in that tournament next week when you know, you want to be qualifying for the Olympics and not having to save yourself for potential, you know, last-ditch effort in that pre-qualifier that exists next summer for teams that maybe are countries that don't make the Olympics. So if you can kind of punch your ticket right now, all the better.
Yeah, because that would be a desperation situation. And it's certainly a situation where the ball's in their court as far as Team Canada and qualifying for the 2016 Rio Olympics. Do you think there's pressure? Because I feel like it would be a big disappointment if they don't end up with one of those qualification spots. I feel like never before there's going to be a lot of expectations and pressure on this Canadian team.
I think there is. I think that, you know, the fact that if you go back a number of years ago and you talk about the fact that this team was, you know, looking at a more of a long-term plan, long-term growth plan. Well, you know, they ultimately weren't able to qualify for the last Olympics, and I think they were projecting forward to 2016. And I think that, you know, if you don't make it this time, especially when you're playing in a tournament where the U.S. is already in, where the Brazilians have already qualified because of the fact that they're hosting, I think you've got to consider yourselves among the top countries in your zone at the very least, let alone in the world. I think it would be a disappointment if you don't ultimately get there. So, you know, if this is part of the the growth and the plan for the Canadians, then I think you've got to be there. And even if you get there and don't medal or don't even finish in the top five, that's fine. Getting there is maybe that first step in this whole process.
Talking to Eric Smith, our basketball reporter, also a Raptors play-by-play man on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and a basketball reporter for Sportsnet. He'll be down in Mexico City for the FIBA Americas. Canada looking to qualify for the 2016 Summer Games in Rio. Andrew Wiggins, that throwdown against Puerto Rico was pretty spectacular. I'm sure people have seen the Vine by now. Is it possible? Now, the United States not going to have their full squad. There's going to be people missing. No Manu Ginobili for the Argentinian team. Is it possible he's the best player that's going to play in this FIBA Americas?
Hey, that's a good question. I hadn't thought of it that way, to be honest with you. He might be, I mean, from a sheer talent standpoint, but, take nothing away from, obviously, who he is as a player and as an athlete and everything else. I don't know if we can say that quite yet, just based on the fact that we haven't seen the full body of work in the NBA yet, let alone in an international ball. So, I mean, from a pure sheer athleticism talent standpoint, he may be. But with his lack of international game, I would hesitate to say that, Ben, because there's so many guys, even just look at last night and use as a minor example, a guy like J.J. Barrett. J.J. Barrett has had a very good NBA career, certainly not a superstar by any means, a very good role player on a lot of teams, whether it be, especially in his heyday in Minnesota, or whether it be with the Minnesota Timberwolves or otherwise. But you get him in an international tournament, and he looks like one of the better guards in the world, or at least one of the elite guards in international play. And I think the international game, a lot of time, especially with some other countries that have perhaps maybe played together a little bit longer or been in more international play, suddenly guys that you don't necessarily know a lot about, or guys that are fringe players in the NBA, or guys that aren't superstars in the NBA, they suddenly look that much better. So I think, you look at a guy like Wiggins, he struggled the first few games in the Tuto Marchand, and then he played extremely well last night. And I think it's a case of him, familiarity with teammates, but also familiarity with the shorter game, with the way it's being called, with playing with the five fouls versus six, just the style overall, and going up against guys that he really hasn't seen a whole ton of before in terms of the opposition as well. So again, I kind of hesitate to say that yet, but certainly if he plays at the level that he's capable of, and if he can use that athleticism to his to his greatest strength, I think that could be a massive weapon for Canada. Because I think Wiggins has a chance to stand out that much more in the absence of a Tristan Thompson. I think if Thompson's there, perhaps you're playing a little bit different. I mean, Thompson's not a guy you're going to all the time necessarily as an offensive weapon down in the post. Yeah. But he's another weapon on the floor overall, and I think you need a Wiggins to step up that much more in the absence of perhaps some of the guys that you had hoped would be playing in this tournament.
Canada opens up the preliminary round against Argentina. That goes on September 1st. And they're going to go through this, and they've already done it at the Tuto Marchand tournament without a guy who could be a top five pick in a couple of years, Jamal Murray, who is going to Kentucky this year, and they won't let him get out of quote-unquote class to come play in this thing. It's not like they don't have suitable guys that can play the point, Corey Joseph. They've got NBAers all over this roster, which is crazy. And they still do have Phil Scrub, too. Do you like the fact that there's a mix? Like, it's not – they could have just stuffed the whole thing with NBAers, but that there's a Phil Scrub, that there's a mix of different types of players on this team. What do you think about that?
I like it. I mean, you think about the fact of what I was just saying, even about the international ball and the international play. Some of the guys, even if you just go back to previous, previous versions of this team, when you think about how long a guy like Levon Kendall played on this Canadian roster, or you look back to other guys like whether it be a Javon Shepherd, or even the past a Rowan Barrett, who's now helping run the program. It's not always sprinkled with NBA players. And I know that there are certainly more NBA guys now than there were in the past, so your options weren't as diverse as they are now, so don't get me wrong there. You were almost forced to go with international guys because that's all you had. But I think the fact that there are guys that are familiar with playing overseas, playing with a lot of the guys that they will be seeing in these competitions, sprinkle those guys in with the NBA players that you have. And at the point guard position specifically, there really isn't another option for Canada when you factor in the injury to Ennis and the fact that, he's going to be trying to keep himself healthy and trying to get himself right for the Milwaukee Bucks this season. So with Ennis on the sidelines, you actually were kind of forced, in a sense, to go a little bit deeper at that guard position specifically. And I don't know how many people got a chance to watch the game last night. If anybody's tuning in online, there are, payment options online to watch. And I watched a little bit of the game, and there's no doubt from reading some of the – I know you had Ryan Wolfstedt on the other day.
Yeah.
Some of those things that he was tweeting as well, the major difference in play when Corey Joseph went to the bench. And with no disrespect to a guy like Phil Scrub, there was a major drop-off
yeah.
In terms of the – the defense, especially at the point position, when Corey Joseph came out. So if there's one thing to be maybe not concerned about, but certainly keeping an eye on, it might be that point guard position and how many minutes can Corey Joseph log to make sure that the Canadians have their best on the floor at all times.
Talking to Eric Smith here, Sportsnet 598 The Fan. Ben Ennis filling in for Jeff Blair. And I know before there was a Raptors, you were a Lakers guy, and I'm sure you were paying attention to the comments that Kobe Bryant and Shaq had for themselves recently in Shaq's podcast. And if you weren't, I'll play them for you right now. But Shaq has his own podcast, which I was not aware of, and they haven't released a podcast yet. It's like a biography. Like they're releasing little snippets of it so that we can start salivating for the actual podcast. But here is Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, and there's a host, John Kincaid, because God knows Shaq couldn't actually, you know, host his own hour-long podcast by himself, I imagine. But Shaq and Kobe talking about their tenure and tumultuous at times, no question, from 96 to 2004. Here, I want you to hear this, Eric.
Is there anything that, Shaq, you would like to take back in the give and take over the years?
I mean, like, you just played the clip where I said I wanted to be traded. I definitely did not want to leave L.A. So, but you know, that's how you got to talk when you're in business, you know, especially when you think you're in control. Definitely didn't want to leave L.A. You know, a lot of stuff was said out of the heat of the moment. I guarantee I don't remember a lot of stuff that they said because I changed my thought process of, you know what, we won 3 out of 4. What the hell are y'all talking about? This is not even really a story.
Anything you want to take back, Kobe?
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. When you say them at the time, you actually mean. And then when you get older, you have more perspective, and you're like, holy shit, I was an idiot as a kid. You know what I mean? So to me, the most important thing was really just keep your mouth shut, right? You don't need to go to the press with stuff. We keep it internal, and we have our arguments and our disagreements, but I think having our debates within the press was something I wish would have been avoided, but it did kind of create this whirlwind around us as a team with myself and Shaq and the press and the media that just put so much pressure on us as an organization.
It's called the Big Podcast. It's on the Podcast One Network, Eric. And it's, man, if those two had stayed together, like, I don't know how many rings. Like, they won 3 out of 4. My goodness. But it seems like if they could go back and talk to their younger selves, they would have given themselves different advice, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, I think I read yesterday there was another quote that I don't think we heard right there where Kobe, and I'm paraphrasing here, talked about if Wilt Chamberlain and Michael Jordan
right.
had been together in their prime, at what point does an MJ say, hey, this is great, but, you know, it's my time to shine. It's my time to sort of, you know, take the lead dog role. So you can kind of appreciate both philosophies. At the time, you've got a young Kobe Bryant who wants to be the man. And as much as he was the man, he was kind of the, you know, part B to Shaq's, you know, to Shaq's A. Shaq was the lead dog, no doubt. He was the big man. They were playing a lot out of the post and feeding the big man, and there's no denying the numbers and the production that Shaq was putting up. But you've got this emerging young player who's only getting better and better and who at the time was considered to be even perhaps better than Shaq at that time and is going to challenge Michael Jordan for that all-time role and as the best all-time in the NBA in Kobe Bryant. And there's no denying that Kobe went on to win 2 more titles with Pau Gasol and Shaq went on to win another title with Miami. So they both still had their success.
Yeah.
But if, you know, in hindsight now, I can appreciate the maturity looking back now. At the time, hey, we're all young once. We all make stupid decisions. We all make rash decisions and selfish decisions. But, you know, as we get older and we kind of get a little more philosophical and we look at what the things that truly matter in life, it's kind of nice to see both of them realize now and appreciate now that, as Kobe said, you know, I was an idiot. I was a young, dumb guy and didn't realize what I had. And if they had stayed together, who knows? I mean, we can never predict and say with certainty what would happen. But to have two guys that would have been arguably the best two players in the league, the best big man and the best scorer, the best talent overall in the league, playing together for more than 7-8 years, playing together for 10 or 15 years and just dominating in Los Angeles for all those years. Just think about how it would have changed even for Kobe Bryant having Shaq there. If you remember, Ben, there was a lot of conversation about whether Kobe Bryant was even going to stay in Los Angeles. It almost seemed like a foregone conclusion.
I thought he was going to the Clippers.
Well, there was talk of the Clippers. There was talk of the Chicago Bulls. I remember making an on-air bet with Jonesy about the fact that he for sure was going to the Bulls and that it was a guarantee. I was going to buy jerseys for people with the number 8 or the number 24 or whatever on the back of the Bulls jersey. But ultimately, it ended up that he stayed in L.A., and luckily they got Powell. But now what's happened? Kobe older in his career, injuries piling up, Powell is gone, you're trying to retool, rebuild. This is not Kobe Bryant wants to go out, but it's the situation that he's kind of has created for himself, they created for themselves, because ultimately after that one championship in Miami, Shaq toiled around as well and was still searching for that right combination. If you can look back and say, man, I didn't really appreciate what I had when I had it.
I'm of two minds of this thing, Eric, because, yeah, there's a side of me that says, oh, man, what could have been with those two and certainly those Phoenix Suns teams if you didn't have Amari Stoudemire and Sean Marion wanting to be the stars in their own teams as well. There's a lot of examples. And even the Raptors, they seem like a bunch that's pretty cohesive. But in that sport, I feel like you almost need to be selfish at times. Maybe not build your entire career about selfishness, but there is something about that killer instinct and being able to score in crunch time and not caring about anybody else that you do kind of need that, don't you?
I think there's something to be said for that, no doubt. And hey, listen, Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal didn't have to worry about this to the extent I'm about to say. But it's also a sport where, I'm not going to say unlike any other, but it's certainly a sport where you have a chance to stand out that much more as an individual, not just as a team guy. And when the amount of money that is available out there, and if teams are paying a premium dollar for stats and production and not as much for the role player type guy or the team guy, you're going to try and get yours while you can, while you're in your prime, while you're young, and while you've got a chance to make your mark on history and on your pocketbook and set up future generations. So you can appreciate that, not just from the superstars, but from guys out there trying to get theirs. You know, like look at the example in Toronto, even if you go back, and here's a prime example of not a guy who was a superstar, but a Mike James. In a terrible year for the Raptors, where the Raptors struggled well below 500, Mike James was a 20-plus point scorer. But no doubt that set him up for a next contract and make a little bit more money than he would have as a role player, as a backup point guard. If you can, you know, if you can shine, if you can be selfish at times, it's going to probably bode well for you, you know, in terms of your stats, in terms of your money. But it might not ultimately work in terms of championships and team play. Because what happens with a lot of guys late in their career, they look to go to a San Antonio, to a Cleveland, to a Golden State now, to teams that are winning because they're willing to take less money because they've made their cash.
Yeah.
But they recognize now, I got to be a piece to the puzzle if I actually want to get that ring. And that's why you see all these veteran players, not just in basketball, but in every sport, that are willing to do that once they've made their cash and once they've had their time in the sun. They'll take a lesser role late in their career to get that ring.
And I don't fault anybody for taking the cash. E, thanks so much for this. Enjoy Mexico City. Like, bring, I don't know, a face mask or something. The pollution's supposed to be not great.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't actually planning on that, but I might. I think I'm probably going to bring a little bit of Imodium.
A little TMI, but yes, I'm with you. I'm with you, man. Thanks for this, man.
All right, guys. Take care, Ben.
Yeah, you too. There's Eric Smith. He will be down in Mexico City end of the month. Canada opening up. It's FIBA Americas against Argentina on September the 1st. When we come back, going to talk to Ben Ryder, national baseball writer. It's a good name if you're a writer. For Sports Illustrated. He's got a story on the website about J.D. Martinez. And imagine, I mean, the Astros are good now, but imagine they still had J.D. Martinez and didn't trade him away for a bag of baseballs. How good would that team be right now? We'll talk about that and plenty more coming up next. Ben Annis filling in for Jeff Blair. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
.42 Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Annis filling in for Jeff Blair. Starting to heat up in Arlington right now. It's probably up to 28, 29. It has not maxed out, though. It's going to be 36, 37 degrees this afternoon at first pitch between the Blue Jays and Texas Rangers from the ballpark in Arlington. That's hot. They don't normally play afternoon games at home for just this very reason, but they're going to do it today. 2 o'clock. Broadcast starts on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 1:30 on Sportsnet. Marco Estrada against Giovanni Gallardo. The Blue Jays trying to wrap up this 8-game road swing. It's 7-1, which is slightly ridiculous. Happy to be joined by my next guest, Ben Ryder of Sports Illustrated. He's got a story out right now on the website. Jeff Luhnow Astros imagine. What if, with once released J.D. Martinez, and Ben, thanks so much for this. It's, I mean, the Astros are way ahead of where we all thought they would be in their development. The Cubs kind of doing a similar thing, and this is kind of a new thing in baseball to go as far down as the Astros went and stripping it so bare and concentrating so much on player development. But to have it turn around like it has in Houston, it's incredible. But imagine if they'd still had that guy who's now a premier offensive power threat in Detroit in J.D. Martinez.
Well, that's right, Ben. And obviously, you know, the Astros and Jeff Luno have done a whole lot of things right. That's all of a sudden clear, you know, after a few years of being the worst team in the league. Here they are, 71-57, a pretty commanding 5.5-game lead in the AL West at this point. It looks like they're going to make the playoffs. But, you know, there's even for a team like that, there's always the opportunity to ask, what if? You know, these guys obviously know what they're doing. They've designed this rebuild to function at a very high level. But you turn around and you just think, you know, last spring they had J.D. Martinez on the roster, a longtime Astro. Tried to trade him, couldn't trade him. He hadn't done much for them. Released him. 2 days later, the Tigers picked him up. And then here he is. And you look at him. He's got 34 home runs. He really has emerged over the last 2 years as one of the game's best power hitters. It's not a fluke. It's really just goes to show that even the best-run organizations do make their mistakes. And the idea is not to function perfectly, just to make it so that the accumulation of your decisions gives you a slight advantage over the rest of the competition. That doesn't mean you're going to be perfect in everything you do.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a fluke because he's now done it in back-to-back years. And in fact, this year is slightly better than the year he had a year ago. He's got 34 home runs. And you look at the three seasons in Houston in a very good hitter's ballpark, especially for right-handed hitters. He only once had an OPS plus of over 100, and that was his first year. I mean, he was sub 700 OPS in 2012 and 2013, and the home runs were 6, 11, 7. Like, how does a guy go from that to what he is now, which is, like I said, middle of the order bat? And again, that's not a great hitter's ballpark in Detroit, especially early and late in the season with the weather they can get.
Right. Well, it was a bit unlucky for the Astros. You know, after 2013, Martinez determined that he had to remake his swing. So he watched a lot of video of himself, and he realized that he was trying to hit down on the ball. When he looked at some of the great hitters in the game, he realized that they were kind of uppercutting the thing, getting a little more backspin. Mm-hmm. So he tried to model his swing after guys like Ryan Braun and players like that. He did this in the Venezuelan Winter League between 2013 and 2014, arrived at spring training with Houston in 2014 with this kind of new swing. A lot of the scouts had been telling Jeff Luno, the Astros GM, that this guy looks pretty good at winter ball. But I spoke to Jeff Luno, you know, earlier this week, and he said 9 out of 10 times when you hear that, you know, it doesn't add up to anything. Ended up not getting a lot of at bats in spring training. The Astros had a lot of outfielders they wanted to get a look at, and they felt like they'd seen him for 3 years. They thought he was a known quantity. So that led to his release. But it was a bad bit of timing because, as it turns out, he was a 1 out of 10 guy.
Yeah.
1 out of 10 guys whose changes to his swing actually adds up to something. Unfortunately, didn't do so in Houston. It did in Detroit.
They're doing all right in Houston, though, to be sure. Talking to Ben Reiter, a national baseball writer for Sports Illustrated, the story on SI.com, Jeff Luno, Astros imagine what if with once released J.D. Martinez. And I mentioned that the Astros have kind of been through hell as far as wins and losses are concerned. Just last year, they lost 92, and you know, a couple of seasons before, looking at 100-plus losses. And it's allowed them to draft high. It's allowed them to focus on player development, on bringing up young players and making sure that they're ready for the major leagues and accumulating young, controllable assets, and it's paying dividends. It helps when you get the first overall pick, and it's Carlos Correa, though, as well. Is this, Ben, is this something that can be repeated? Like, is, we know sports are copycats, they're abound in sports, whether it's baseball or whatever. Is this even something that you can repeat? Because it's a long-ish process, and it's not guaranteed to work, but when it works, it seems to work pretty well.
Yeah, well, it's very risky, and it's very difficult. You know, one thing that Jeff Luno and his front office have always been is transparent. When they came in the end of 2011, beginning of 2012, they were honest to the fans. They said, it's going to be a tough few years. We're not going to do anything that's going to, you know, detract from our effort to become contenders as early as possible. That means they're not going to sign, you know, a mid-level veteran just to keep up appearances. Maybe they're going to lose 90 games instead of 100 games. They weren't interested in that. As far as whether it's replicable, sure. I think we're seeing it, you know, the 76ers in basketball, for example, seem to be trying to do this right now. But it's very hard. There's thousands and thousands of decisions that go into this process, and you can't miss on very many of them. You can't have very many J.D. Martinez's. And let's remember, it's also hard psychologically. There's only a few months ago, before the Astros turned out to be for real all of a sudden this year, the Jeff Luno and his front office are getting killed across baseball for what they were doing. You're perverting the game. You know, you're not trying to win. That's against the spirit of baseball. You know, as usual, winning tends to solve a lot of problems.
Yep.
You're not hearing that so much anymore. But if they had tried all this and it didn't work, that's the risk. You'd go down as really one of the laughing stocks in baseball history. And who knows if you'd get a job again anywhere else. You know, I think that these guys at this point are standing on pretty firm ground.
Yeah, it sounds exactly like you're talking about the Philadelphia 76ers. And maybe their Carlos Correa could have been Joel Embiid, but maybe that's the key cog that that can't ever make it to the NBA and maybe derails the whole thing. Ben Reiter's our guest of Sports Illustrated. Before I let you go, I want to get to your story on Paul Goldschmidt, big hulking first baseman, who now has 20 stolen bases. He's done it. 20 this year, which is ridiculous. It's only been caught 5 times. It is amazing. I mean, we think of stolen bases being so much about, well, speed. And the guy, say what you will about him, he does not have it. But it's so much more than that, apparently, Ben. And that you can just, on watching video and understanding how to become a better base runner, you can turn yourself into a 20 stolen base guy. Like, it's almost unbelievable to me.
It is. And, you know, it kind of tells you what Paul Goldschmidt, who's one of the more underrated players in baseball, if not sports, is all about. You know, he was coming into the draft out of Texas State. One scout gave him a 30 rating on the 20 to 80 scouting scale as far as speed.
Yeah.
30.
Yeah.
That's very slow. He's a little bit faster now. He lost some weight, got a bit more athletic. But he really steals bases with his mind. You know, he's perfected his lead. He studies pitchers. You know, some guys will only stare you down if they're definitely going to throw home. Some guys, if they're planning to make a pickoff attempt, will refuse to look at first base. Like a poker player, he essentially studies tells, and he's figured out how to become a great base dealer without speed. And that's really because he wants to. He has the determination and the will to do this. It's really the same way that a guy who was an 8th-round pick, wasn't very highly thought of not too long ago, is now not only an annual triple crown contender, but also a gold glove first baseman. Where not long ago, people thought maybe he wouldn't be able to play defense well enough to play anywhere in the field at all. Maybe they thought he'd just be a DH. Really one of the more inspiring, quiet stories in baseball right now. But one thing is for sure, this guy is a force to be reckoned with in the NL. You know, I think he has to be up there with Bryce Harper in the MVP conversation with a month left.
It's an incredible story, and yeah, I think he'll be right there with an OPS over 1,000 now through 125 games. Ben, thanks so much for this. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ben. Anytime.
There's Ben Reiter, national baseball writer for Sports Illustrated. When we come back, Stephen Brooks is now a Twitter star. If you don't follow him, you should. S. Brooks Baseball. Who is he? Well, he's the senior VP of business operations for your Toronto Blue Jays. And if you see him on the street, he's the guy walking around like, you know, that gif of Vince McMahon where he's strutting like and his chest is all puffed out. That guy's got it going on right now. Who has a better job than the guy who takes money for Blue Jays tickets? Like, come on. We'll talk about Blue Jays playoff tickets and what the crowds are going to look like here coming home the Blue Jays homestand after they wrap up this road swing this afternoon. Ben Ennis filling in for Jeff Blair. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.